talked about it a little bit, didn't say much, but I do say to you, you know, we need tomahawks for the United States of America, too. We have a lot of them, but we need them. I mean, we can't deplete for our country. So, you know, they're very vital. They're very powerful. They're very accurate. They're very good, but we need them, too.
This is my video update on this Friday afternoon, October the 17th, coming to you from Nicosia, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And of course, the big story is the Trump-Putin phone call that took place yesterday. Caught everyone by surprise. No one was expecting a phone call between Trump and Putin. And we got a phone call between Trump and Putin. Actually, Trump posted on Truth Social that there's going to be a phone call, or that there is a phone call taking place between himself and Putin at this very moment. He's speaking to Putin, and as he's speaking to Putin, there's a post on Truth Social saying, "I'm speaking to Putin right now, and I'll let you know how it goes when the call ends." So, yeah, it kind of came out of the blue, or at least it feels like this phone call came out of the blue, out of nowhere. And we did a really in-depth analysis, me and Alexander, on the Duran. So definitely check that out on the Duran. It should be published in the next hour or two. But I'll go over a little bit as to my thoughts on this this phone call between Trump and Putin. And the call lasted for about 2 hours to 2.5 hours, depending on various reports. Some reports say it lasted a little under 2 hours. Other reports claim that it was 2.5 hours. I believe the Kremlin readout, the statement from Ushakov, says 2.5 hours was the length of the call between the two leaders. Now, there's a lot of mystery as to who initiated this this call. The Russian media claims that Putin initiated the phone call. Putin wanted to speak to Trump. But when you go to the Kremlin readout, you go to Ushakov's statement, there is no such statement saying that Putin initiated this phone call. The source for Russia initiating the phone call is coming from a couple of Russian media outlets. The United States, on the U.S. side of things, the White House is not saying who initiated the call. They're not saying that Putin initiated the call. Ushakov, in his statement, is not saying that Putin initiated the call. So all of this is being sourced. The original source for Russia calling up Trump, calling up the United States, wanting to speak to Trump, is from a couple of Russian media outlets. And then the BBC picked up the Russian media outlets saying that that Putin initiated the phone call. And we have the narrative, which is that Putin wanted to speak to Trump, which may be true. That may be the case, but there is a chance that this is not the case. If Putin did initiate the call, then it means that that Putin needed to speak to Trump. He needed to get in contact with Trump in order to talk about the escalation, the tomahawks, right? So so that's where we are with that. The discussion with Alexander, as we were talking about the details of this call and what's going on here, we came to the conclusion, Alexander believes that this is the case, and I think he's right on this, that this call was probably in the works for a couple of days, maybe for about a week, the planning of this call. And it looks like Orban is playing a big role in this. It looks like Orban is the person that has been working over the past couple of days to get a call in place between Trump and Putin. And they finally got it a day before Trump was going to meet with Zelensky, most likely because the rhetoric coming out of Trump with escalating with Russia by sending American contractors to Ukraine in order to fire Tomahawks into the Russian Federation. It looks like that Orbán was very alarmed by the big mistake, the catastrophic mistake that Trump was making. And it does look like that Orbán finally convinced both sides to get on a call so that they could find a way to de-escalate, because it does seem like Orbán is the one leader in Europe, along with Fico, that understands the risk, the catastrophic risk that American soldiers in Ukraine firing Tomahawks in Russia entails. And Orbán, I've been reporting on this over the past couple of days in my videos, Orbán has been sitting in on all of the EU meetings, and he is very alarmed at the rhetoric coming out of the European Union, which is pretty much a war rhetoric. And he's saying that the EU is actually discussing plans to go to war with Russia, of course, with the United States having their back or leading the way, depending on how you want to frame it, right? The United States has to be involved, of course, if Europe is ramping up for war with Russia. And Orbán has expressed how concerned he is with the EU plans to go to war with Russia. It got to the point where Orbán even created a petition for Hungarians to sign so that they can say that they do not want to go to war against Russia over Ukraine. So anyway, it looks like Orbán was a key figure in getting this call put together, and that would explain why the decision was made to have a summit in Budapest in about 2 weeks, going from the readouts of both sides. Trump proposed Budapest and Putin agreed as a location for a meeting between the two leaders in the next couple of weeks. Now, Peskov put out a statement just a couple of hours ago, and he was asked about the timeline for a meeting between Putin and Trump, and he said it's going to take place in about 2 weeks, maybe a little more than 2 weeks, but it's not going to be delayed more than that. So it's going to be about 2 weeks, maybe a couple of days over 2 weeks, but that's when a meeting between Putin and Trump is going to take place. Now, when you go off of the readouts, the U.S. Readout and what Trump's concern was as he was speaking to Putin, his main concern was that getting to a deal was taking too long. It was very difficult. It has been very difficult for Trump to get some sort of a deal with Project Ukraine. At least that's what the readouts are saying. That was Trump's big concern, is getting a deal and then moving on to business. Trump is very concerned about business, getting a deal, getting that out of the way, and then putting together some big business deals between the two countries. While Putin's concern in the call was of course getting to root causes, and getting the United States to understand how important it was for Russia not just to sit down with Zelensky and just sign some deal and just be done with it and not address the root causes, and then the conflict would come up again. And effectively what was being pushed on Russia was a type of a freeze, and Russia is not interested in a freeze. Russia wants a comprehensive solution to the problem in Ukraine, to the conflict in Ukraine, as well as to some sort of a security architecture which takes their interests into account. And that is Russia's concern. And for Russia, this is existential. And Putin, during the phone call, was trying to explain this to Trump. So Trump was thinking on a business track, let's get this over with, let's get a deal, let's get you and Zelensky sitting next to each other, let's sign a deal, and then let's get on to business. And Putin was basically saying, if you go off of the readouts, that sounds all good, but that doesn't solve the root causes of the problem. We need to solve this thing once and for all so that it doesn't come up again in a year or two or 10 years. We need to solve this thing. And And that's what we need to focus on. It's going to take time. Solving this conflict and getting to the root causes is going to take a lot of time. It's not about just me sitting with Zelensky and just signing a document. So I mean that was pretty much the concerns of both sides as you go off of the readouts. That's the impression that you get from the readouts. What Trump was focused on and what Putin was focused on. And so we are going to have Lavrov and Rubio meeting over the next 2 weeks to prepare for the big summit in Budapest. Trump, he is now putting a pause, at least it appears as if he's putting a pause to tomahawks to Ukraine, at least for the time being. He put out a statement yesterday, and he said that the United States has a lot of tomahawks. We got a lot of tomahawks, but we're not going to give any tomahawks to Ukraine because we need those tomahawks. We need those tomahawks. There's a lot of them, but we need them. And so for the time being, they're not going to go to Ukraine. So it looks like for the next 2 weeks, we have a type of pause or freeze in the tomahawks to Ukraine. A very, very bad idea from Trump, the tomahawks to Ukraine. But that's where we are at this moment. And they are speaking with Orban. Putin had a phone call with Orban. Putin filled in Orban as to what was discussed, which once again leads me to believe that Orban played a big role in putting together this phone call and this summit. Putin explained everything to Orban. And Peter Sijarto, he also posted on X that Hungary is preparing for this summit meeting. Actually, Orban also posted on X, "I just got off the phone with President Trump. Preparations for the USA peace summit are underway. Hungary is the island of peace." Well, Hungary's not an island, but it is going to be the focus of peace in the next 2 weeks. But it's not an island. It's smack in the middle of Europe and smack in the middle of EU NATO territory, right? And so a lot of people are talking about Putin going to Budapest, which is fine. It's fine if Budapest wasn't in the location that it is, right? If Hungary wasn't located where it is, smack in the middle of EU NATO territory, surrounded by hostile forces. With the exception of Serbia, of course, not Slovakia, actually, Slovakia. But anyway, my point is Putin going to the EU is very risky. Going to EU NATO territory is very risky. Flying over EU NATO territory airspace is very, very dangerous. I believe this is going to be Putin's first trip to Europe since the SMO to the EU. Since the special military operation. Keep in mind, you have the ICC warrant, of which Hungary is still a signatory to the Rome Statute. But there's a caveat here. Hungary is petitioning to get out of the ICC. It's not out of the ICC, but it's on track to get out of the ICC. But according to all the analysis that I've read, it's not out of the ICC just yet. And it is obligated, if you go by the Rome Statute, it is obligated to arrest Putin should he touch down in Budapest, which is not going to happen, by the way. But that's the situation there. And of course, everyone is talking about Putin's path to Budapest. How is he going to get to Hungary? How is he going to get to Hungary? Belarus, over Poland, Slovakia, and then Hungary. Once you get to Slovakia, you're all right. But flying over Poland, way too risky. way too risky. I can see Sikorsky trying to bring down Putin's plane. I can see Poland trying to do something there. I don't know. That's just a guess, but I don't trust Putin's plane over Poland. Over Turkey, that's fine. You can go under, go south, then across through Turkey. And then you have a problem. Bulgaria and or Greece in order to get to Serbia, right? Yeah, I think, even through Greece. I mean, Bulgaria, you get from Bulgaria, you get to Serbia, right? So, I mean, that could be a route. But Bulgaria is Russia friendly. The people are Russia friendly, but the government, don't trust them. Don't trust them. Globalist government, very EU integrated, NATO integrated. I don't know. Putin has to find a way to get to Slovakia or Serbia. Once he gets to Slovakia or Serbia, he's safe. He's in friendly territory. Serbia is going to protect him. Slovakia is going to protect him. But how do you get there? Do you go under or do you go the more direct routes? I could be a little off on my geography, but I don't think I am. Actually, wait one second. Wait one second. I may have a map bookmarked here. Yeah, going through Greece, from Turkey through Greece, doesn't take you directly to Serbia. Going through Bulgaria, Turkey to Bulgaria, will take you directly to Serbia, but you have to pass over Bulgaria. Your other option is passing over Poland. One thing that's going to have to happen, and I don't know, do you trust the U.S. government? They're going to have to provide a military escort, are they not? Or Russia fighter jets to provide an escort, or maybe both, or maybe they have like 4 or 5 decoy flights. I don't know. Maybe they have like 3 flights going in one direction and 3 flights going in another, and Putin's on one of the 6 flights or something like that. I don't know. I don't know how you do it. I really don't. But you got to imagine that you have the ICC, fine, but the EU, NATO, the 3-letter agencies, Ukraine intel, the leaders of member states, right, of the EU member states, the Baltic states, Poland, all these countries are going to be looking to take down Putin's plane. I mean, to find a way to ground it, or who even knows what else. I don't even want to think about what else they actually might try to do. The neocons, what they're going to put the EU, NATO member states up to. Or how crazy the EU, NATO member states are at the moment that they might try something like taking down Putin's plane if it's over their airspace. And then you get into the complications of Putin in Budapest, right? Hungary's going to provide security, absolutely. And everyone trusts Hungary. And Hungary is a great mediator. Hungary is a fantastic mediator. And they deserve to be the mediator. And this is a huge win for Orban, and a huge win for Orban. The fact that that Trump trusts him, the fact that Russia trusts him, the fact that Hungary is going to be the center for perhaps the biggest negotiations of our times, let's say of the past 4 years, okay? Those are some of the biggest negotiations in the past 4 or 5 years are going to be taking place in Hungary, and they're going to provide all the security. There's no doubt about it. They're going to lock Hungary down, Orban and his security and the police and the military, no doubt about it. But man, you got Ukraine right there. You got all of Europe, all of the crazy NATO, EU, Europe right there. They can drive into Hungary. SBU, Budanov, all these guys, you know, they are planning everything out now to try and get to Putin. The 3-letter agencies, don't forget that Budanov is tied into the 3-letter agencies and the CIA and all of these guys and the MI6. And German intel, you know that they are planning everything out now to try and get to Putin when he's that close in Budapest. So I don't know how they're going to do this. I think the chances of something happening to Putin are small, but they are a lot greater than his trip to Alaska. Where they had the meeting in Alaska, everything was more isolated and contained and under the control of the United States, and the Europeans were far away, and all the crazies were far away for the most part, and they had everything under control, right? And it was a short trip, right, for Putin to go to Alaska. But this time around, it's a whole different ball game. So anyway, a lot of talk about Putin in Budapest. Very, very risky, but also very creative, very clever in a way as well, because you give a huge win to Orban, and you really stick it to the EU and to Ursula and all of these people, right? You really, really stick it to them. The fact that there's going to be a summit, and to Zelensky, of course, a day before he lands in D.C. to meet with Trump to ask for more tomahawks. Trump, it looks like he's putting the tomahawks on pause. Who knows? He may change his mind with Trump. By the time I upload this video, he may change his mind. You never know. But going off of his statements from yesterday, he's putting a pause on the tomahawks until he has the summit meeting with Putin. And so Zelensky doesn't get the tomahawks. And Zelensky has his arch rival, his nemesis, Orban, hosting a peace summit between Trump and Putin. And Ursula has her arch rival, her nemesis, Orban, hosting a peace summit between Trump and Putin. And of course, Orban has elections in a year's time. And this is a huge boost for Orban and a huge boost for Hungary. Like a massive, huge boost for Hungary. And it really, really sticks it to Ursula and to Kallas and to Merz and to Stammer and to Tusk and to Rutte and to Stubb and all of these guys that despise Orban and that want to see him lose the elections and are constantly gunning for Orban's removal and despise any type of peace talks, any type of negotiations between the United States and Russia. All these people must be going freaking crazy right now. I mean, they must be having a complete freaking meltdown over the next 2-3 weeks. Man, the Europeans, the neocons, the Kellogg's, the Lindsey Graham's, the collective West mainstream media, the three-letter agencies, they are going to be doing everything in their power to poison the upcoming talks. And then after the talks, they're going to do everything in their power to poison whatever agreement or understanding or rapprochement or diplomacy is made in Budapest. Believe that. So yeah, the Telegraph actually has an article with the title, Trump meeting Putin in Budapest is blow to Europe. Summit of superpowers in Hungary is a huge boon for Viktor Orban and a major humiliation for the EU. No doubt, man. No doubt. And the Telegraph also has an article with the title, Trump plans victory fund for Ukraine, weapons for Ukraine to be bankrolled by fresh tariffs on China in U.S. president's plans floated to Europe. You want to know when this article from the Telegraph was published? Before the Trump-Putin phone call. Before the Trump-Putin phone call, Trump had an idea to place 500% tariffs on China. And the proceeds from those tariffs were going to go to Zelensky so that he can fund the victory of Ukraine. Man, Zelensky must be pulling his hair, man, when he found out about this. Axios reports that Zelensky found out about this when his plane landed in the United States. That's when he found out about the Trump-Putin phone call. And he was not happy. He was not happy at all. He was going to get the proceeds from 500% tariffs on China, Podolyak. How much money was that going to be, Podolyak? A trillion? 2 trillion? What is going on, Podolyak? That's Viktor Orban. I could have bought 1,000 homes. So anyway, that is the situation with the Trump-Putin phone call. Once again, check out the Duran. We did about a 50-minute video on this. And our conclusion was that both Trump and Putin needed this this phone call, and they needed this meeting. Both of them needed it. Trump needed it because he was making a catastrophic decision. He was listening to Kellogg and the Europeans and Lindsey Graham, and he was escalating to a point of no return, right? A very, very dangerous escalation. American contractors in Ukraine firing nuclear-capable long-range Tomahawk missiles. That was a catastrophic decision that Trump was very close to finalizing. And this gives him a pause. And it also gives Orban and Putin an opportunity to discuss this with Trump, to talk some sense to Trump. And that's another reason why Putin probably agreed to Budapest, is because he understands that Orban is the one European leader that can actually talk some sense to Trump, right? So when the meeting's over, say in Budapest, the meeting is over between Trump and Putin and everything goes well, the first person that Trump's going to talk to and get advice from is going to be Orban. It's not going to be like Alaska, where he went to the Europeans and he called Macron, Merz, Ursula, Starr. Remember that? He called them all over to the United States. That's who he talked to the next day. Or they flew to the United States, and that's who he talked to the next day after the meeting in Alaska. This time around, Orban's got him there. So Orban can talk to Putin and to talk to Trump and tell him, look, listen to Putin. Listen to Putin, man. He's not bluffing when he says that the Tomahawks are going to be a huge red line. He's not bluffing when he says that it's going to force Russia to retaliate. He's not bluffing when he says that if Tomahawks are launched into Russia, then all diplomatic relations are off. He's not bluffing about the fact that Russia is winning the conflict, because Trump actually believes what Kellogg is telling him about casualties and that Ukraine is winning. Trump actually believes that. And Trump is very, very propagandized, and he believes all of this stuff that's coming from Kellogg and the Europeans. So Orban will be able to tell him that Ukraine has lost the war. Believe me, Trump, listen to me. I'm telling you right now, Ukraine has lost the war. He's going to be able to tell him. So listen to Putin, take Istanbul Plus. And he'll also be able to tell Trump that everything he's hearing from Kellogg about the Russian economy is also a load of bollocks. Do they say that in Hungary? Do they say a load of bollocks? I don't think so. But anyway, I don't know what the term is in Hungarian for bollocks. But that's what Orban is going to tell Trump. Don't listen to all the nonsense about the Russian economy that Kellogg and Ursula are telling you. It's not in tatters. It's actually seeing quite healthy growth. So despite the 157,000 million gazillion sanctions that you've placed on them. So that's one reason that Budapest is a good decision, is because you're going to have Orban there. But yeah, Trump needed the phone call. He needs this meeting. Putin needs this meeting because the Tomahawks are a bit of a headache for Putin, actually a big headache for Putin, not the actual missile. Don't listen to the dummies and the stupid rhetoric that's coming out of Zelensky and the Europeans and the collective West media, which is saying that Putin is afraid of the Tomahawk missile. You see, we threaten Tomahawk missiles, and Putin is afraid because the Tomahawk missile is awesome. It is the greatest wonder weapon ever in the history of mankind. That's just dumb. That is dumb. The Russians can handle the Tomahawks. They can knock it down. The problem with the Tomahawks that it presents for Putin is that you can't hide the fact that you're going to have American contractors firing the missiles from Ukraine into Russia. It's going to be an American attack into the Russian Federation. And with the other weapons, you were able to hide it, right? These aren't NATO military personnel. These aren't American personnel. These are mercenaries, or these are trained Ukrainians firing the HIMARS. Okay, you were able to cover it up. You can't do that with the Tomahawks. And so everyone's going to know that the United States military is firing long-range missiles into the Russian Federation. And for Putin, this is a problem, because Putin has invested a lot in diplomacy with Trump. He has overinvested in his trust of Trump and his diplomacy with Trump, and a lot of people in the Kremlin are going to probably tell Putin, if the Tomahawks were launched into Russia, they would tell Putin, you see, just like with Merkel, you put your trust in this collective West leader, this time the President of the United States, and you got played. You got burnt. He was campaigning. Trump was campaigning against long-range strikes into Russia. Remember that? When Trump criticized Biden and Biden's attack comes into Russia, and Trump campaigned saying he's going to put a stop to long-range missile strikes into Russia. He said, this is crazy. I don't like it. He said, I don't like it. And I am going to put an end to long-range missile strikes into Russia because it's going to take us to World War III, and it's nuts. And Putin believed Trump, and he invested in diplomacy with Trump. And now you have the United States military launching long-range missiles into Russia. And it was not going to look good for Putin. And if he did nothing, and if he did not retaliate to Tomahawk strikes into Russia, then it would look even worse for Putin, right? And of course, it would destroy the diplomacy, all the work put into rapprochement between Russia and the United States. The work that was put in by the U.S. side, that would get destroyed. The work that was put in by the Russian side would get destroyed. All those trips from Witkoff, all of those meetings, all the diplomacy, Saudi Arabia, Alaska, everything that has eight calls that they've had, it would all be wasted, right? So Putin needed the call, and you got the summit, and just to wrap things up, I think this is the last chance at peace or at normalization of relations between the United States and Russia. I think this is it. This is the last chance. And I really believe that a lot of the focus is going to be on trying to deprogram Donald J. Trump. I don't know. Something tells me that that's what the focus is going to be about. That's what Orban is going to focus on. That is what the Russians are going to focus on, because Trump has this belief, watching Fox News, listening to Kellogg, listening to the Europeans, talking to Zelensky nonstop. Trump has this belief that Ukraine can win, or Ukraine is winning, or the Tomahawks are an amazing weapon, or that the Tomahawks are going to make the difference, or that 500% sanctions are going to make the difference, or that that the Russian economy is going to collapse. And I think that in Budapest, they're going to try to present the truth. And I think it's going to be extremely difficult for the Trump White House to believe it. That's just my take on it. I think it's going to be very, very difficult for Trump and the Trump White House to actually believe that what Fox News is telling them, what Keith Kellogg is telling him, what Lindsey Graham is telling him, everything that he believes about Ukraine and the conflict in Ukraine and the Russian economy and Besant and Lutwick and all of these guys, everything that they're going on and on about with sanctions and tariffs and 1.5 million casualties and all of this nonsense is false. How are you gonna bring Trump around to that? I think it's going to be extremely, extremely difficult. So anyway, and that is if the Trump White House actually genuinely wants to find a real root causes peace, a root causes solution to the problem. They may not even be looking for that, right? They may be on the escalator, no reverse gear, and it's going to be a conflict with Russia. There's no turning back, right? So, you know, that's the situation. Let's do a couple of more stories, and we can wrap this video up. Since we're talking about neocons, how about John Bolton? How about John Bolton, charged with mishandling secret documents? John Bolton. Trump doesn't learn, huh? John Bolton in his first term, Keith Kellogg in his second term. He just doesn't learn. Maybe he doesn't want to learn. Maybe he has no interest in learning, right? But he just doesn't learn. So, a federal grand jury in Maryland indicted Bolton on Thursday on 8 counts of transmitting and 10 counts of unlawfully retaining national defense information. From FBI Director Kash Patel, the FBI's investigation revealed that John Bolton allegedly transmitted top secret information using personal online accounts and retained said documents in his house in direct violation of federal law. John Bolton. Couldn't happen to a better guy. John Bolton indicted. Yeah, well, who's next? Brennan, Clapper. It's a long list. Comey, Pence. It's a long, long, long list. Mueller, who's next? Who is next? And is Bolton really going to be punished? Do people like Bolton really get punished? I don't think so. I don't think so. But it's an interesting story, nonetheless. And in Greece, we have the announcement from the Greek government that Greece will be introducing a 13-hour workday, courtesy of the center-right New Democracy of Mitsotakis, right? They are going to be introducing a 13-hour workday. Did I say work week? I meant work day if I said work week. But the center-right New Democracy, which is really not a center-right party. They're just a globalist party. Globalist, right? The globalist New Democracy, neoliberal globalist New Democracy, Mitsotakis party, very integrated into the European Union and to Ursula and Eat Them Bugs, Klaus Schwab and the U.S. deep state. They are introducing a 13-hour work day. And they claim that this will help Greeks to avoid having to get a second job, right? Working 13 hours a day will help them so as to not have a second job, because Greeks are in such an economic bind. They're in such economic despair. All the prices are going up, rental prices going up. You can't buy a house or a flat. Everyone's priced out of buying property or buying a home. The salaries are the lowest, some of the lowest in Europe. They just don't increase the salaries. And so people are struggling, man. People are hurting. And what they usually do is they get second or third jobs. And so the New Democracy Party believes that a 13-hour workday will help Greeks so they don't have to look for second jobs. The other thing that this does is that it also prevents Greeks from getting a second job that is under the table, you see, that they're not reporting, right? The 13 hours at your company will be reported and taxed, but a lot of Greeks, they can get a second job, and a lot of it may be under the table type of money, cash services, something like that, and the government can't take its cut, right? But this is going to cause a lot of protests in Greece. A lot of protests over the 13-hour work day in being introduced in Greece. It's not every day that this new legislation applies to. It's limited to just 37 days a year, and it's only for the private sector, so not for public sector employees. Only for the private sector, and you can only have 37 days of the year where you have your employee work a 13-hour work day. But of course, they're rolling this out, and the plan, I imagine, will be, if you get no resistance, to expand it. So 37 days goes to 57 days, and 57 days goes to 157 days, and 157 days goes to 300 days. And you know how all of this goes when you're dealing with this type of government legislation, right? So they're rolling it out slowly. They're balloon testing this. They're going to see the reaction of the people. And if there's not much pushback, then they'll run with this for a couple of years. And then They'll give the option for it to go to 57 days and 157 days. And before you know it, it'll be a 13-hour work day, right? That's how this stuff works, man. That's how this stuff works. And you know that the European Union is looking on and they're watching all of this because this is obviously something that the oligarchs and the globalists in the EU would like to implement, right? The 13-hour workday. Let's see how Greeks react, and if there's no reaction, or if there's a weak reaction, then we can start rolling this out to other countries. That's how this stuff works. So let's do a clown world. How we doing on time? Yeah, let's do a clown world and wrap up this video. And today's clown world is courtesy of the defense minister of Lithuania. Keep your eye out for this person, the defense minister of Lithuania, Dovil something. I don't know what her last name is, but just call her Dovil. Dovil, and she gave an interview to the media. She's a rising star, by the way. When Kaja Kallas becomes the president of the European Union, the European Commission, Dovil is going to be the foreign minister. She's a rising star in the halls of Brussels. And she said that being the defense minister of Lithuania, being the defense minister of the military powerhouse that is Lithuania, she said that one of the plans that they're talking about is a Game of Thrones drone wall in order to defend against Putin and his drones. I will play you the video of Dovil, a rising star in Brussels. Where do they find these people? Anyway, here is Dovil talking about her Game of Thrones drone wall, and that's it for me. I will see everybody tomorrow. Take care.
It's better to have a very efficient defense system, be it drone wall or whatever we call it. I'd like to have, you know, a wall that would look like in the Game of Thrones. That'd be great. But, well, this is reality.